This episode is brought to you by the Pelora Group.
Welcome back to Winning Through Culture.
I'm Tim Flanagan.
And I'm Amanda Kramer.
When culture's not a priority, people aren't a priority. Having an intentional focus helps you as a leader remain impactful and relevant as you move your business forward.
Welcome to Winning Through Culture.
Welcome back to another episode of Winning Through Culture. I'm very excited to be here with a very special guest today, Dr. Cheryl Richards. Cheryl and I have known each other a few years here in Charlotte. She has spent 30 years in higher education, was the first female president of Johnson & Wales University here in Charlotte, went on to start the extension campus for Northeastern University out of Boston here in Charlotte a couple years ago, and then has been a dean of CPCC's Cato campus, where she's spent a lot of time in the community developing relationships with business leaders. All of that led her to a new challenge and opportunity professionally when she became the CEO of Catapult. And because of your background and expertise in the topic we're discussing today, I'm going to share with everybody a little bit about what Catapult is, because it is a statewide employers association. It was created when the Employers Association of Charlotte was merged with Capital Associated Industries of Raleigh. You serve 2,000 plus small to medium sized companies in the Carolinas, Virginia, and Georgia. We are one of them, in full disclosure. There are a wide array of HR services and resources, employment law counsel, advice on different employment matters, wage and hourly data, employee groups, training, events, recruiting and talent acquisition, compensation analysis, training and development, and fractional HR services. So a full stop shop for small and medium sized businesses that can't afford to have their own full-time HR department, may have a person. So we'll put the Catapult website in the show notes, but I think another impressive aspect of Cheryl's background is in 2021, she was appointed by Governor Roy Cooper here in North Carolina to the NC Works Commission, and serves as a member of the Employers Leadership Committee, helping enable the state's workforce and businesses to compete in a global economy. So super accomplished, lots of boards, American Cancer Society, Taste for Hope Gala, Charlotte Regional Business Alliance Foundation, obviously the Employers Association of America, and NC State HR Advisory Board. As far as accomplishments, Cheryl, you know, I've been super impressed since I've known you here in Charlotte, but you're not once, but twice honored as most admired CEO in Charlotte, a top 10 most inspiring women leaders, and top 25 women in business, and top 50 most influential women. You and I share the 40 under 40 alumni distinction. I got mine at 39, so I got in right under the wire. And in 2014, you were named Woman of the Year. So again, very, very accomplished. And happy to know you, consider you a friend. We have a little fact in your personal life. You are here in Charlotte with your husband and son, who is now a senior in high school, and your daughter is in her junior year playing soccer in college. And you and I have the little fact of having grown up in Denver, Colorado. Not a lot of people that I've met. I think, Cheryl, you were the first person I met in 2 years in Charlotte. And we went to rival high school, so that was fun. So
I welcome. Don't hold it against you, though.
No, I know, you didn't. You wouldn't be here today, so I appreciate that. I went to Cherry Creek. Nobody liked Cherry Creek, so, and still probably don't. So all that to say, I think you're very qualified for our topic at hand today, and I do want to say thank you for being here with us. So I am curious to, you know, I've kind of laid out many elements of the journey. There's a vast career here, but what inspires you in your role as president and CEO of Catapult Inc.?
Yeah. So it's interesting. A lot of people ask me after 30 years in higher education, why did you make a leap to an employers association? Mm-hmm. And I said to them, you know, it's all about people. If you think about higher education, it's about developing young talent, and you want that talent to be ready for the workforce. Yep. And so you have to listen to employers about what employers want, and then build programs and develop students that have the skills and competencies to then go to work someday. So if I take that and then I apply it to Catapult Employers Association, that's what we do every day. We listen to employers. You said it in the bio, small to medium-sized businesses who are having a lot of people challenges. It's all about people, right?
The end of the day, that's what business is about.
End of the day, it's all about people. And so it was a natural transition for me to get out of my first career after three decades and then, you know, do my encore career, but stay in a field that was similar. It was around developing people capacity, giving employers the confidence that the decisions they were making about their people every day were the right decisions, whether that was compliance or whether that was culture. So it was a natural progression for me.
Progression there.
Yeah.
That's good. Well, and I'm sure you've seen a lot of change both in the 30 years in higher education and now in the field you're in. So how do you see employee engagement playing a role in fostering an innovative culture in a company?
Yeah. I feel fortunate that as I was building my career, I had a lot of leadership opportunities. So I was what I call self-proclaimed leadership junkie. I went to, you know, every leadership seminar I could get my hands on. I did a PhD in leadership because I really wanted to understand the core and the essence of how can you be a good leader regardless of the industry. And I was fortunate that my career happened at a time when the paradigm around leadership was changing. And so we were starting to adopt the servant leadership mentality as opposed to the traditional hierarchical, you know, top-down approach. And I was further blessed by working in academia, where if you know anything about being a president of a university, you really have no power as a president of a university. You have a lot of constituents that you are appealing to. Students, you have a student government, you have faculty. Faculty are organized like a union. You have alumni who have an opinion. You have legislators who have opinions. You have other community stakeholders. So
sounds simple.
It's very simple, you know. So the notion of leading in an organization like that is really about servant leadership at its core. And it's about listening to your constituents and figuring out how do I help them be the better version of themselves, as opposed to kind of some of the older leadership books which were really about power and command and control. So, you know, when I think about inspiring a culture of engagement around leadership, for me, it's about engaging the employees in work that they want to do, because I had an opportunity to get engaged in work that I wanted to do. And I had great bosses and I had terrible bosses, but the people who really respected me and my opinions and knew that I was all in to help the organization advance were the ones that I really emulated and looked up to. And so I think that element of culture is really important when you think about running an organization.
Mm-hmm. As you have moved into this new role with Catapult, what are some of the things that Catapult's doing working with these small to medium-sized businesses that are helping, again, teach those companies how do you have a engaged employee and how does that ultimately lead to an innovative culture?
Yeah, I think it's the engagement of employees that help organizations advance. So, you know, I was thinking about maybe a couple of examples that were the by accident examples. You know, if anyone knows the story of the sticky note, which we all use.
From 3M, yep.
It was an accident. Mm-hmm. 3M was actually trying to build superglue, trying to make a superglue. And one of their employees failed. And all of a sudden, they ended up with a reusable adhesive, right? So you think about those kinds of stories. Well, that's innovation. That employee who came up with that solution had to have been inspired or empowered by the leadership of the organization to say, it's okay to fail, right? So we talk a lot at Catapult about, we have a learning culture, and it's about if you're going to fail, fail fast and learn from it. And we tell our companies, you know, now not every company wants to fail. And certainly if you're in certain businesses, you don't want to fail, you know, medical professions and manufacturing probably and airplanes. But I think having that freedom and flexibility to experiment and try and to advance an idea is where some of the greatest innovations come.
Yeah, we've talked about that topic before on this podcast. And again, obviously there are fields where failure is not an option, as they say, but so many fields, professional services, companies and whatnot, innovation comes more as a result of making mistakes and learning from those mistakes as opposed to hiding those mistakes or attempting not to make mistakes.
Right.
So
right.
With that as a backdrop, one might argue it's a challenging time to be an employer. At least the last couple of years have been coming through the COVID experience that we all shared, but what are some of the common challenges you're seeing organizations face today, Cheryl, in building that culture? And then, you know, what are some of the ways they can overcome those challenges?
Well, you know, I think pre-COVID, employers were grappling with the question of multiple generations in the workforce, right? Because that is just an ongoing issue that employers have to work with. You got, you know, young 20-somethings that are coming into the workforce for the first time, and then the baby boomers and the, you know, World War II, even back then, who wanted to stay in the workforce even longer. The stock market impacts a lot of that, whether people are going to stay in the workforce even longer. So I think originally engagement was around, how do I appeal to different age generations? How do I appeal to different ethnicities, races, people who identify in a different way? Like, how do I create a culture of belonging in my workplace? Then you had the pandemic that came in and everyone went home.
Yeah.
And everyone realized that they could work from home and they could be sort of productive. And meanwhile, businesses were trying to bring people back into the office. Some of it was productivity driven, but a lot of it was just culture driven. And so now, post-COVID, what are we coming into 3 year of when we were getting back into the workforce in 2021. And you have this generation of college students who are now in the workforce who've never known anything other than remote or hybrid.
Some of them went to school.
Remote. Some of them went to school remote and hybrid. And then you have people who are at the end of their career who are like, I kind of got a taste of this flexibility in hybrid or remote working, and not really sure that I want to go back. And meanwhile, organizations are trying to solve for that productivity question, but they're also trying to develop talent and leadership for the next generation. And it's really hard to identify talent when you don't see them all day long. And when you don't have this kind of interaction where you can watch their work product and give them real-time feedback and coaching and all of those things. So that's really changed the workplace when you think about culture and employee engagement today. It's catapult decided because we were the merger of two entities, one in Charlotte and one in Raleigh, that now serves the whole state, that we would go what we call remote first. Well, I was a brand new CEO coming in with a remote first environment. How was I going to meet all of the talent and all of the people there?
And so what does remote first mean?
It means that you can work from home unless we have a client engagement or we're running a training class.
Okay.
But you don't have to work remote. If you'd like to come into the office and work in the office, you may certainly come into the office. So very flexible, but it's changed the dynamics of how even we as an organization are engaging employees, because we live in that hybrid space now and have employees who are full-time remote and employees who are in the office.
So when you think about that dynamic, I want to stay with this theme because, yeah, it's a real, very real dynamic. How is that affecting the development of talent and the next generation of leaders?
It's really a challenge right now. As I was saying, the managers can't real-time assess the work product or how the work is getting done. And you know this, you've been in business long enough. There are two elements, right? You measure the what, and you also measure the how. And sometimes now in this environment, it's really hard to measure the how. Email communication, texting, small snippets on Teams channels, the communication style has changed. And so to address how somebody's doing their work is a little bit harder to assess. And so we've talked to organizations who are trying to identify their next generation of leaders. And then they say, well, I don't even know how to assess who might be in that top pool that then we're then going to develop. And then you have the next layer, which is, does that layer of talent want to be developed? Because they know if they're developed, then that might mean a change in the routine for them. So it's a really challenging time for companies and leaders and organizations to start thinking about building their pipeline of talent.
So, you know, some businesses have been pretty hardcore saying, you know, remote work is over. You're in the office 5 days a week. Some businesses have fully embraced it. And then some have gone to this, you know, hybrid kind of 3-4 type schedule. Do you see a difference among the companies you work with in how the choice they made there is showing up and how well the company's doing?
We do. And I think in some industries, it works really well. In other industries, it doesn't. And it comes down to the availability of talent in a lot of ways. So if you have two employers who are both hiring for a financial advisor, and one position is fully remote and the other position is 5 days a week required in the office, you will self-select out talent as a result of that. Just by picking a path. And so we've had some employers come to us and say, this is a part of our core values. We are in the office, and that's okay if people self-select out before they get to the interview process, because we'd rather they go through that and we'd rather get the people who are aligned with our mission, vision, and values. We have other employers who say CPAs are really hard to find right now. And so we just need to cast the net as wide as we possibly can. And if that means if I can find somebody in Virginia who's willing to work remote and come in once a quarter to be part of team meetings, we'll live with that.
Got it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the talent landscape. How about, companies innovating and kind of pushing the envelope going forward? Do you see a difference in the innovation cadence, if you will, based on
remote,
how people, remote, hybrid, you're in the office every day?
Yeah. I think it has been proven challenging to innovate in remote, fully remote environments. Part of it is because there's this thing that, oh, by the ways, right, that you know when you're in an office and you're walking by and you say, oh, by the way, Tim, I was thinking about X. What are your thoughts on that? And it probably wasn't a preconceived notion. It was just, I saw you and you reminded me that I was thinking of something. And so, hey, I'd like to get your input on it. It's a lot harder for me to do it, hey, Tim, oh, by the way, remotely, because I can't see you. I don't know if you're in a meeting.
Yep.
I don't know if you're busy writing emails. I don't know if you're in heads down time. So those impromptu kind of chat things are fewer in a remote environment. And so now we see companies that are trying to script, like, brainstorm, creativity, innovation days, because you kind of need to come together, whether it's in a remote Zoom room and you have some prompts that you're talking about. And we've done a fair amount of that with some members, kind of design thinking in a remote environment. It's just, there's something to be said for the just impromptu, oh, by the ways.
Yeah. And I don't know, it's interesting you say that because it's hard to schedule that.
Right. They're impromptu.
It's the impromptu nature of the physical proximity of, oh, by the way.
Yeah. Right. It's what we used to call water cooler chat.
Yep.
Right? Or the cafeteria chat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of sticking with that theme and innovation, I guess, ultimately, do you feel like looking out into the future, 3-5 years down the road, that there's going to be a discernible curve of businesses that innovate and grow as a result of innovation because of the physical proximity? Or do you think everybody figures out how to innovate in a digital world?
Well, I think there's a couple questions packed into what you said.
Yeah, there are.
And so,
didn't articulate that well.
I mean, I think it depends how you define innovation, right? You can define innovation in a product. You can define innovation in a service. You can define innovation in a process.
Mm-hmm.
So there's probably a lot of other ways that you could define innovation.
But those are probably the three biggest.
Like, those are some three big things. So you think about the engineers at Apple, been working in Google. They've been working remote for a long time, and they're still innovating. We still have new technology that came out and latest iPhones that are getting smarter and smarter every day. So there are certain industries, I think, that's just part of the culture. They're going to innovate. The bigger thing, I think, for most companies is, how do you innovate on your service delivery, and how do you innovate on your own internal processes to make it easier to serve your customers or to create new products? And that's a harder nut to crack, because service and process are directly tied to employee engagement. Product is kind of an outcome of a job or a function, unless, you go back to the 3M sticky note example, where it was just an accident. But I think service level and process of how you do business is more directly tied to employee engagement and how we think about innovation internally.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point I want to maybe spend a little more time on. So the process itself, walk through that a little bit. That's a very interesting point. I mean, that As I was listening to, I'm like, oh, yeah.
It's a lot of what holds companies back. So yeah. When I was at Johnson & Wales, a colleague there gave me one of those Staples easy buttons
yeah.
that you
yeah.
tap on and it goes, doesn't that
work.
Was easy.
Yeah.
But he gave it to me because I kept saying to people, like, it doesn't have to be hard. Like, we overcomplicate a lot of processes. We engineer things for the 10% exception as opposed to engineering something for the 90%. We're going to use it. And so people have come to learn that Cheryl is about, like, let's be efficient, let's be easy, let's be smart, let's not make it harder on ourselves. And part of that I've brought into Catapult, I've brought this philosophy called high tech, high touch. So we've now dissected a lot of our processes to say, what can we automate and use technology to advance where we can put high tech in a queue that will then create capacity for high touch, which is what we're doing individually, service oriented. And that kind of innovation is just a little bit harder for people to put their heads around because we've always done it that way, right? And so it was really cool. Now we're getting to a place in our own organization where people are starting to come up with solutions to problems and say, well, if we're using Salesforce as a technology tool, why don't we integrate that with our email so that we take a step out of it? It's like, well, that's a simple innovation that just made business easier for all of our employees, and it made our data more robust. So, you know, a simple idea of innovating around a process using technology that then alleviates and creates capacity for humans, I think is a really interesting place to play.
Any other technologies that you're using in that way of automation?
Yeah. So we have automated quite a bit. We've created portals for our members to get access to real-time salary and wage and hour data.
Okay.
So today as a member, you as an example, you want to post for an administrative assistant position. You could go put in through your member portal, I'm looking to hire an administrative assistant, Charlotte region. Give me salary ranges based on this
experience level,
whatever,
position.
Real time,
okay.
Get that real time data. And then you could say, well, expand my search to Raleigh. All right. Well, does the wage change for Raleigh? All right. Expand that to Greenville, South Carolina. So we've created technology platforms and resources for members to use. We do the same kind of thing with employee engagement surveys. We will run employee engagement surveys for members. A lot of times they're annual because they have some compliance checklist. They say, I've got to do an employee survey. But for the more progressive companies, we will do a pulse survey. And so we'll use a platform. There's a couple different platforms that we use where we can do an employee pulse survey and just create it very quickly, get it into your hands. You can modify the questions, get it out to your people. And, you know, 24 hours later, you'll know what's the pulse going on in your...
Is that more of a 2-3 question type survey?
It can be a 2-3 question. I mean, I wouldn't do more than 7.
Yeah. So it's
just
short,
a quick pulse.
Short.
Yep.
What are some of the... I'm very curious. What are some of the things, Cheryl, that people use that for now from an employee engagement perspective?
Yeah. So I think there's a couple different things. If you roll out new processes, when companies roll out goals, like this time of year in February, you have a new strategic plan or you've got annual goals that you want to pulse, or your employees familiar with them? Are they aligned with them? Do they understand them? Is there clarity around those goals? We see that a lot around policy changes. Do people understand the policies? Is it clear to you what your PTO has changed to? We'll see it around particular times of the year where, you know, it's Black History Month or it's an issue around inclusivity and the management or the leadership team is starting to hear kind of some grumblings around, I think we've got something going on. And so just a quick pulse survey. It can be around culture. It can be around policies. It can be around changes. It can be around direction in the organization. It can also be a great way to solicit feedback for what's next.
Now, what I'm hearing you say is in the technology realm, it's a lot more real time than static.
Yes.
Like I remember way back in the day, the salary studies were done once a year.
Yep.
And that was it. And
right.
You got your data and then you waited a year for the data to be updated by whoever,
right.
Bureau of Labor or whatever.
And we used to do those for members.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
It's funny, now we still have members who say, where's my big, thick salary
gun?
And we're like, it's on the dashboard.
Yeah.
Like,
go get it in real time.
Exactly. Because the data is changing, you know, every 3 months.
Well, and I think the same thing on the, you know, we've talked before on this podcast, and we use the Best Places to Work survey in our business, which is a snapshot in time. And it's great. But I think the idea of the Pulse survey is a lot more applicable in today's day and age when things change.
Change constantly. Yeah. That's the one thing you can guarantee is change.
The only thing that's guaranteed other than death taxes is change.
Change.
So. Are there other things that you guys are seeing people use tool-wise, or we'll stick with tools, around employee engagement? I mean, the Pulse survey is a great idea.
So there are a couple tools that I'll highlight that we offer for our members. One is called Culture Amp. That's that Pulse survey.
So that's the Pulse survey.
You can go in there and, you know, it's anything that you want to get feedback on that'll make work more meaningful. And then WorkTango is another platform that we use for members. They had a whole list of, recently they did an article about 9 ways to engage your employees and, you know, things that are timely and relevant that you might want to ask employees. So, you know, things that are, how do you understand our goals? Are they transparent to you? Do you understand what your job is and how to train your people in their work? So little tiny things like that make a big difference.
I had a couple conversations today alone. That is right on par with.
When you think about the whole topic that we started around employee engagement, it's about the alignment with the company's mission, vision, values, and where they're going. If people feel alignment with that, they're probably very willing to innovate and share ideas. If they don't feel that alignment, then, you know, it's a job. It's not necessarily something that they want to contribute to make better.
When you think about engagement, Cheryl, it sounds like that's kind of your touchstone, is it's about alignment of what the company's trying to accomplish and the clarity and the values and the match to the employee.
Yeah. So I'll give you my personal story. I've done this a couple places now, but when I came to Catapult, we didn't have a mission statement. We were a 65-year-old company without a mission statement because we were two legacy organizations that had two different mission statements and came together. And so rather than me sitting in a room with the executive team, you know, writing on a whiteboard and coming up with something pithy, I took 30 people in the company and split them into 3 teams. I put 10 people on a cross-functional team, and they were tasked with coming up with the mission statement. 10 people cross-functional, tasked with coming up with the vision statement. 10 people cross-functional, tasked with coming up with the values. And each team had an executive sponsor. And so we went back and forth to make sure there was alignment, because certainly you don't want your vision to be incongruent with
your mission.
But now I host a new employee orientation every month. And when I bring new employees in, I say, here's our mission, vision, and values. And these aren't mine. These are not Cheryl Richards' mission, vision, values. These were created by your colleagues who wanted to serve our members in a particular way. So these are our company values. And everywhere I go, I spew the mission statement like any good CEO would. But what makes me more proud is that we do a company huddle every Monday morning at 9:30. The entire company gets on a Zoom call. And one of the things we do, we acknowledge new people, we acknowledge birthdays and anniversaries, and we celebrate kind of things like that. But we always have at least one values nomination. And anyone in the company can submit somebody else in the company for a values nomination. And it goes to our 5 core values. So every Monday morning at 9:30, the company is hearing our values through some story.
Yeah, through
some
a story
example.
Of how it was lived out.
Yeah. So that's how we're building culture and engagement. It's not me recognizing. I do recognize a lot of people, because that is one of the core tenets of, you know, an innovative and engaged culture is celebrating your people. But getting that recognition from your peers and having your peers reinforce mission, vision, values is really powerful.
Yeah, that is powerful. That's very powerful. What role do you think purpose in the job someone's doing plays in that engagement?
I think a lot. And Gallup has done a ton of research studies over the years. It's actually what led to the book, The Strengths Finder. If you've read the Strengths Finder book,
we've used it, yeah.
Gallup did a research poll and found that only 15% of people were engaged in the workforce, like really found purpose in their jobs. And it was because there was a misalignment of their strengths, their innate strengths, with the job that
job
they were
they
doing.
Were in.
So I think that's, you know, I mean, the data doesn't lie that if you're not aligned with purpose and something you feel is leveraging your strengths, you're probably not going to be as engaged.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there any trends you are seeing relative to engagement as far as, again, I think what you shared are some very easy, well, maybe not easy, simple to implement steps. But are there any trends you're seeing that tell you things might change relative to employee engagement? Or do you think it's the more alignment, the more tied back to purpose, the stronger the engagement?
Yeah. One of the things that is creating a real challenge right now for engagement is this inverted ratio of talent available. So what I mean by that is if you had all the talent in the world that you could recruit as a business, you could focus on your employee engagement programs less because you had a lot of talent and you could pick and choose and you could bring that talent in the door and say,
Tim,
we're so glad that you want to come work for us. Here's our mission. Here's our values. Here's our affinity groups. Here's how we support employees.
Here's the deal.
And, you know, that's how we operated. Now there's a shortage of talent and there will continue to be a shortage of talent just demographically. The numbers just don't match up.
Pointing in that direction, yep.
Yeah, so you and I at our age have pretty good job security. The generations behind us have even better job security because there aren't as many people to fill the jobs there. So now as a result, employers are having to think very differently about their incentives and their engagements and their things that they're willing to do to bring people into an organization and keep them, right? So you heard a lot back in the day about there are not enough women in technology positions. Well, part of it was the pipeline, right? There weren't enough women. Part of it was when women got into those organizations, they didn't want to stay because the culture was
toxic.
So bad,
yeah.
Right? So now you have that on every level in every industry because they're just, the pipeline of talent isn't there. And then when they get there, you want to keep them, right? So now employers have to think, how am I creating a workplace where people are excited to come to work every day, whether it's remote or whether it's in person? What kinds of projects are they getting that excite them and that they want to continue working on? Where's the professional development? We hear that all the time. People are leaving. Well, there's no professional development and people want to be invested in and they want to grow and they want to not just stay in the same role. So that whole dynamic of how employers are engaging people has changed by that mere fact that the bar graph got flipped.
Yeah. It's fascinating to hear you say all that. That's like the whole premise of this podcast. Yeah.
Summed it up.
Summed up in one episode. And well said. I mean, as we wrap things up, you know, is there any kind of parting wisdom? I mean, you've given some great insights and ideas, but is there any parting wisdom, Cheryl, you'd share with those listening to the podcast today?
You want another pithy soundbite? I don't know that I can give you one.
It doesn't have to be another pithy soundbite.
I think just listening to employees, and I think employers are going to have to listen more because those that don't will not find themselves with a, you know, robust talent pool either to attract or to retain.
It's an employee's market,
as they say. Yeah, it is an employee market right now. And so employers grappling with how do they realign to be current and create environments where, and a young employee or a mid-career employee wants to make a career change and they come in and they say, I align with what you're doing. I want to be part of this. I want to make a difference. I want to contribute. I want that mutual investment in me that you're going to give me the space to do that. And that you're going to value me as an employee.
Yeah, that's, again, simple, but not always easy.
But not always easy.
So,
yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Cheryl, for being with us today. Really very insightful. Some great timeless principles, to say the least. and also coming from real life experience of Catapult and your role every day, working with a lot of small businesses, medium-sized companies. So super impactful. Thank you very much. And thank you all for being with us on another episode of Winning Through Culture. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Winning Through Culture.
Until next time, stay intentional, be impactful.
Because your culture matters.